So how do you separate fact from fiction with so much information out there? I'm Hal Eisner. Today we're going to talk about an organization called the News Literacy Project that helps students learn how to figure out some of that on their own. Why don't we introduce ourselves? Go ahead.
My name is Valeria Lukin, and I'm a ninth grader at Daniel Pearl Magnet High School.
Usually I don't ask women their age, but how old are you?
I'm 15.
You're 15 years old. What do you want to be when you grow up?
I'm not sure right now, but maybe a journalist.
And why do you think that?
I just think that it's very interesting and an important role.
What makes it important?
My journalism teacher, Ms. Shavira, mentioned how journalism is kind of like the first draft of history, and I think that's very powerful and important.
I think that's very well said also. Mom?
Hi, my name is Lorena Lukin. I'm Valeria's mom. I'm here to support her.
And what do you think of this program? And our next guest is going to explain the program. It's called the News Literacy Project. News Literacy Project, not program. And it's really designed to help young people separate fact from fiction, especially when it comes to social media, which is in a world different from when this thing started, actually. But what is your sense of your daughter's involvement in trying to better understand what's real and what's not?
Well, I think it's important for, you know, the students to have this background to help them to know what is real, what is fake, and to educate them so they have a better future.
Did you worry about what she reads online?
Yes, I do worry. And at the same time, we as parents try to keep her away from social media just because there's so much negative things out there. So that's one of the reasons why we try to keep it limited for her.
I want to come back to that. Okay. Alan, you started this thing. Alan used to be with the LA Times. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us how this all came to be?
I'm Alan Miller, the founder and CEO of the News Literacy Project and a former longtime investigative reporter with the LA Times. In 2006, when I was doing investigative reporting for the paper in the Washington Bureau, I was invited to speak to my daughter's middle school in Bethesda, Maryland, where we live, about what I did as a journalist and why it mattered. I was already concerned about two things then. One was how my own daughter, who was 12, was accessing and evaluating the tsunami of sources of information of such varying credibility, accountability, and transparency. And this is pre-smartphones, I might add. And also the wrenching transition happening in the news business and whether there would continue to be an appreciation and demand for credible journalism. So I passed the first test when I got done and Julia gave me a hug. I had not completely embarrassed her. And then that night, she came home with 175 handwritten thank you notes from her classmates, and we sat and read them all out loud. And I could see what had resonated with the students, and I began to think if a lot of journalists brought their expertise and experience to bear in the nation's classrooms, this could be truly meaningful. And 2 years later, I had a founding grant to start NLP.
That's fascinating. You know, you and I have been around the block a couple of times, and our journalism roots go way back. And, you know, we've seen media change over the decades. In television, I've seen a change from film to videotape to digital to more people working the equipment to less people, and thanks to automation, even less people. That's a sword that cuts two ways. But basically, we have seen many changes. This business is, frankly, about as old as I am. And so there aren't many industries that you can say have spanned your lifetime. Usually they're very long or they're upstarts, right? They're startups. And so in journalism, in not so much in print, but in broadcast, it's a short lifetime. And it just keeps changing with all the digital and all the technology and the apps and this and that and the other. The idea of fake news is not new. It's just, what's new is that somebody actually coined the term. Because presidents, and I use presidents because there's always been a tense relationship between presidents of the United States and the White House press corps, which plays itself out every year, at least until recent years, at the White House press dinner, where they make fun of each other. And that's how they vent, right? But there's always been a tough relationship because the presidents get criticized by the media or they get caught with something maybe they didn't even think they were doing, and it's in the media for the public to see. So there's always been kind of a head-to-head, head-butting sort of thing. This idea of fake news, though, which came after the development of this organization, really kind of took on a life of its own.
Yes. So as you indicated, you know, we had started well before, you know, fake news and alternative facts and Russian disinformation become such a part of our consciousness. And I don't really care for the term fake news. I think it's a bit of an oxymoron. If it's fake, it's not news.
Right.
I mean, journalism can be imperfect in practice, as we know. And we are a rigorously nonpartisan organization, I might add. But there's no question that there is a lot of pressure on the media now, and greater awareness and need to underscore the importance of both the First Amendment and a free press in a democracy. And as you said, what's also changed, of course, is the landscape. I mean, we're now in such a hyper-partisan environment where people tend to see their news through prisms of red and blue, and I think sometimes see the world in terms that are more black and white, and look for more confirmation of their existing biases as opposed to information that will inform them. So one of the things we really emphasize is for students to get a wide range of views and to be mindful of what their own bias that they bring to everything that they're consuming.
I was going to break that down a little bit because, first of all, you're teaching young people. I gather you're teaching young people because you can't help the current generation. You can maybe set the future generation down the right lane.
Well, first of all, we decided to focus on middle school and high school students and give them the tools to know, you know, what to trust.
They are the future.
Because they are the future. Also, we're reaching them at a time when they are forming habits of mind and consumption habits that will last a lifetime. And we're getting them at a place in school where we can still get all of them before they've moved on. And also, frankly, before, in some cases, they begin to harden in terms of their own views and approaches. It's also a generation that is already engaged in the conversation, whether they're texting or blogging or posting. You know, they're participating, and we want them to do so in a way that is responsible and credible and really empowers their voices.
So, Valeria, let me ask you, what have they taught you?
I've learned how important the role of a journalist is and how their work is what informs the public and how it can impact them.
So I've always thought of news as being like a big old cork board on the wall. You know what I mean? You still have those, right?
Yeah.
and you post little things with pins,
oh, okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you walked into work one day or into school and there was a post-it that said, it's Valeria's birthday, everybody mm-hmm. would know it's Valeria's birthday. I've always seen sort of news the same way, that we are sort of an electronic bulletin board where we provide information, and largely, much like a student council representative, they go to the student council meeting, come back to homeroom and tell us what happened. We go to the meeting and we get on TV and tell everybody what happened. Mm-hmm. I think there's some similarities there. But I think the most important thing is that as a journalist, your job is to be a purveyor of information. You get the information, you articulate the information. Let me take that back. You get the information, you confirm, you corroborate, you vet the information, mm-hmm. and then you articulate the information. And that way, you're doing your job. How do you corroborate information? The standard bar has always been two sources. So if you can find two people that you feel represent maybe two perspectives, and they confirm exactly what you're saying, then most likely you got it right. And so you corroborate that information. Have they taught you about that sort of thing? Have they taught you the difference between a citizen journalist, a mainstream journalist, and maybe somebody who is on social media being a social media journalist?
Well, in one of the lessons, we were taken through the steps of what a journalist's job is like. And so we got to figure out on our own, with the guidance from Checkology, of how important it is for the role of a journalist to double check their sources and to not just believe the words that someone they interviewed was. Like, they need to double check with other people who were there at the spot to make sure that what they're producing and writing is factual.
And that's really important. So let's pick up on that word Checkology, which is the study of checking. And that's sort of what I talked about earlier, which was the notion of corroborating information and checking and make sure it's true. Now, Mom, you have been a consumer of news. over the years, whether that was in the Spanish media or whether that was in the mainstream English media. And did you ever question what people said?
Oh, I question everything all the time, yeah.
Yeah.
There are sometimes I just don't want to watch it anymore because you don't know if it's true or fake, you know?
Can't you tell the difference?
Certain things, yes. But some things you kind of have to think about it.
Like what?
Well, I mean, there's just different things out there, you know, that you don't know if you want to believe it or not. So you have to, you know, obviously an example would be Checkology. You check it, you know, and you do your research. But there's a lot of stuff.
You know, it's interesting. Media is not really the only business where people should be checking things twice. Go to a doctor and they give you some kind of a diagnosis and it doesn't sound good to you, what do? You get a second opinion, right? So, I mean, there are lots of examples in our lives where we count on more than one person to tell us something to be sure it's accurate. In news, that's our job, is to make sure it's accurate before we give it to you. But if it's not for some reason, and it's very rare, we'll do a correction. We will stand up and say, hey, we got that wrong, but this is right. And that's what we do, because our job is, as far as protectors of the First Amendment, our job is to purvey free speech and give information and help people understand what's going on in their world. I think it's a very important thing. It is really the distinction between free world countries and countries that aren't free, that have state media, that get told what to write on behalf of maybe a dictator or somebody who's in power that wants to control everything.
Hal, if I can just pick up on that point. You know, today students are getting news largely through their devices, through their smartphones and on social media, and it's disaggregated. It's not necessarily clearly coming from a reputable news source, and it's competing for their attention with so much else that is not meeting those standards and that may be intended to sell and persuade and to incite and even to mislead. And so what we're doing with Checkology is giving students the tools to make a distinction between what is created using those standards and is not and may not be intended, you know, to inform them in a dispassionate and accurate way. And we're giving them the ability to make that judgment. We don't tell them what to believe or that any one source or any one outlet is more credible or less credible than another. It's really for them to look at everything they see, read, and hear. And to go to your point, not just news, but all information, wherever and however they encounter it, to be smart and skeptical consumers and sharers.
I think it's interesting in today's world where we have social media, we have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have all these different things. But who checks it? Who checks it? Who checks to make sure that what somebody wrote was accurate? Who checks it to make sure that what was put on there wasn't some ad sponsored by some other foreign country? I mean, it's a free form, right? So we don't know because of you have to trust the people you follow. And if you trust certain journalists, then you follow them and you can trust them because you've developed a trust for them. But I think social media has kind of changed everything.
Well, as you said, there's no barrier to entry to those who would create things and make things up, whether for profit or ideology or to create mischief. And in fact, in many cases, it's made up to look like news, to deliberately mislead. So what Valeria was talking about is a lesson that we've created where a student actually plays the role of a rookie reporter in a breaking news story, and they have to interview eyewitness sources and official sources and expert sources and get documents and tweet and then build a story that reflects the standards of quality journalism and then reflect on what that means in terms of how hard that is to do, to vet, to check, so that they'll be looking for information that meets those standards. And when they find information that doesn't, they'll weigh in. We encourage them to weigh in and ask questions to those who have created it.
So they're actually doing it. So because they're actually doing something, they're experiencing it. But Checkology, is this some kind of a page on your website that you can go down a list or something?
So Checkology is a cutting-edge online platform with 13 engaging real-world lessons led by diverse journalists and other experts on the First Amendment and digital media. You can find it at checkology.org. And it's being used in classrooms throughout the country, and we've got educators in 105 other countries who are registered to use it. And there are quite a number of educators in Southern California and throughout the state who are using it as well, including at the Daniel Pearl Magnet School in the San Fernando Valley.
And that's where Valeria goes. But I want to understand, this is a business, it's a nonprofit, but do you charge for the schools to get your curriculum? Is that how that works?
So there's two versions of Checkology. There's a basic version, which is four foundational lessons that can be done with a single login for a teacher, one-to-many, projected on a screen or a smart board. And then there's what we call premium Checkology, which is all 13 lessons, and students can get their own login and can self-pace and get remediation. They can earn digital points and badges. Teachers do all of the assessment online. We charge a very modest price point for premium Checkology because we want it to help us not only reach to scale, which is happening, but also to help us be sustainable.
Can grown-ups do this, or do you have to be in school?
It's aimed for classroom teachers. I mean, we've got librarians using it. We do have homeschoolers using it, after-school programs. We do have some other resources that we create that are appropriate for adults. We have a weekly newsletter called The Sift that takes that week's viral rumors, hoaxes, conspiracy theories, and journalistic ethics issues and turns them into timely lessons with prompts and links. That's available at no cost and is a great tool for parents and grandparents.
And you sign up for that on the website?
Yes.
I'd like to see what that's like.
Yes, so you can sign up through info@newslit.org for the SIFT. Also, our website, newslit.org, has a lot of resources that are appropriate not only for educators but for adults. There are quizzes and news lit tips and so on that are accessible to everybody.
I think it's interesting, one old newsie to another. I think it's interesting that after years and years of doing something, and you've taken on a lot of information, you've seen trends, you've seen what people do, and you say, you know what, I can maybe make a difference. Is that what happened to you?
Well, you know, to me, journalism was always really a calling. As we were talking earlier, I did it from the sixth grade on. By the time I'd finished graduate school, I'd done four internships. And then I was a reporter for 29 years and had a lot of great experiences and saw the impact and power when it's done well, done right, that journalism could have. And I thought of really the News Literacy Project as my second journalistic calling. Initially, I thought of it as moving from the supply side to the demand side, but I quickly saw this was so much of a more broadly applicable critical thinking skill, really a survival skill in an information age. And I feel blessed to be able to continue my work as a journalist in a different realm. And, you know, we've now reached well over 126,000 students with Checkology. We aspire to reach far more. But I do feel like we're making a significant difference at a time when this is urgently needed, not only for the next generation, but for the future of quality journalism and the health of the country's democracy.
I'd like to get your perspective on that, because we've seen such a splintering of how people get their information. And, you know, I totally believe that, you know, we get our stuff on phones with notifications. We can watch streaming shows or stories. We can watch on our laptops. We can see on our desktops. It's not just a TV monitor anymore. And I really believe that someday that you're going to be able to hold something in your hand, and I'll be standing on it, and I'll be talking to you like a hologram. I call it a hologram. I mean, what the hell, right? And so I really think that as platforms change, the one thing that people have to understand is the basic tenets of journalism don't change, that you still have to have two sources. You still have to vet and corroborate. You still have to know what you're talking about. And why? Because you're going to get sued if you get it wrong. And your company is going to be sitting there in a courtroom dealing with some story you put together that wasn't true. And that's why the mainstream media probably is worth thinking about in a little different light, because we do have responsibilities. We have legal responsibilities, and we could be taken to task in a courtroom if we don't get it right. Right?
Well, yes. I mean, I think when I started NLP, my goal was that to create an appreciation for exactly the values and the standards that you referred to, because amidst the wrenching changes that are happening, However people get their news and information, and it is important that they appreciate those standards and values and look for things that represent them and reflect them. And then hold journalists accountable to achieve those standards.
See, I always think they'll be purveyors of information. I don't care if it's a hologram or if it's some other form of where the platform is. I think there will always be purveyors of information. And as such, I think we will always have the same basic job, and that's who, what, when, where, why, and how, and get it right.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, the challenge is that there are now exponentially more creators of information who are not seeking to meet those standards and are not accountable in any way. I mean, you talked before about making mistakes that, you know, were inadvertent, and then making corrections. And this is one of the things, again, we teach students to look for, because it is the first rough draft of history, and journalists do make mistakes for lots of reasons, but generally not because they've made things up. But that's the challenge, and that's what's so important, because without an appreciation and understanding, I mean, the next generation, of those standards and values, they will not seek out and demand quality journalism, never mind ever pay for it. And so that's the true risk to the country's civic life, is to have a next generation that is still understands and appreciates what it takes to do things that meet the kind of standards that you and I are so familiar with from our long journalistic careers.
But I also think that for a couple of guys who came out of an industry that started with three television stations, which was usually ABC, NBC, and CBS, and all of a sudden it grew to a 500-channel universe, and then all of a sudden it grew into yet other forms like digital forms, I think that we have a pretty interesting perch from which to look at what's happened to this industry. And I think what's happened to this industry is it is the same industry. You just have to understand that platforms change, but journalistic basic fundamental things that you do to get it right don't change. And so it's very important for accuracy and for those out there, or like Valeria, who are even thinking or entertaining the idea of becoming a journalist, it's about being right. It's about the truth. It's about being honest. It's about telling it the way you have learned it to be accurate, not something that you imagined to be accurate. Right?
Yes.
And so your favorite reporter is? Boy, talk about a dead pause. Hal Eisner.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What the hell?
What the hell? Yeah. Okay, very good. Bottom line is what? Bottom line is?
To be honest.
To be honest.
And to tell the facts.
Tell the facts.
Tell the facts.
Be correct.
It's important. Be correct.
So how are we going to get you to trust the media?
We need good news.
Good news?
It's and beautiful. Fact
it's
news.
Beautiful outside today. The sun is shining and the flowers are growing. How about that?
That's perfect.
That's good news. Okay, and Alan?
Well, I think we need to create a next generation that will be part of the information solution instead of part of the misinformation problem, and really be upstanders for facts.
I want to thank Alan, Valeria, and her mom. A good discussion, and an important one, because what you get in the way of information needs to be something you can trust. And it's important for us who deliver the news to believe that you trust us. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.